Nottingham Forest 4, Reading 0. It's difficult to know quite how to start the podcast these days without saying what's already been said in the weeks and the months that have gone by in what is turning into an absolute horror show of a season. Reading lose again, Reading capitulate again, and Reading concede 4 goals again. Welcome to episode 293 of the Tireless Den podcast, where we will be looking back on another wasted Saturday afternoon for absolutely no one's pleasure. So thank you very much for deciding to tune in. Hopefully we'll try and make it as enjoyable and as entertaining as possible. My name is Ollie Allen, and the man brave enough to stick up his hand and volunteer to join me on today's show is Ben Thomas. How's it going, Ben?
Apart from the fact I'm a Reading fan, life's all right, really. I think if you could take Reading Football Club out of the equation, it would be even better at the moment. But it's a hard sell. It's a very, very hard sell. It's like trying to sell Easter eggs at Christmas at the moment. So it's very, very difficult. We'll try and make sense of it anyway.
Yeah, there were Sundays where I would look forward to talking about Reading, but right now I think I'd rather talk about anything else apart from Reading. Not that I don't want to be here, of course. We are here for everybody's listening pleasure, and as I say, hopefully we'll try and make some sense of what was another very, very disappointing day for Reading against Nottingham Forest yesterday. Before we do go any further, as always, a shout out to our sponsors, ZCZ Films. Always appreciative of their continued support. So please do go and check out all of the content that they produce over at ZCZ Films. And of course, also to all our Patreon subscribers who continue to support the website and the podcast with their monthly donations. As I say, really, really appreciated. And it does keep us going at times like this. When the football isn't great to watch and not great to analyse, so to see those donations still coming in to keep our spirits high and to keep us motivated to keep producing the content on the website and here on the podcast, it is really appreciated. So if you do want to go and help us out, as little or as much per month as you wish over on Patreon, that's patreon.com/thetirelessend. Right then, let's get into it then, and the recap for Nottingham Forest 4, Reading 0.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So Reading made 3 changes for this trip to the City Ground on Saturday afternoon. John Swift and Tom Holmes both out of the squad altogether. They both had COVID, Paul Ince said, both got on Thursday, so out for this game. Lucas Zhao had COVID earlier in the week, but was able to be named on the bench. So but obviously those 3 players dropping out of the starting lineup. Josh Laurent coming back in for his return from injury after about a month on the sidelines. He replaced John Swift. Scott Dan came in for his first start since injury as well, replacing Tom Holmes. And then Yaku Mate came in for Lucas Zhao up front and ended up playing 90 minutes up front, despite Paul Ince saying earlier in the week that he wasn't ready to play for 90 minutes yet. So that was how Reading lined up. But ultimately, that we were given something to talk about just 17 seconds in to this game. If you thought it was bad, then it really was bad in this game. 1-0 down inside 17 seconds. You always know it's bad whenever the highlights start from kickoff. I don't think the Sky ones did, but on YouTube and stuff like that, I think the highlights started from when Forest kicked off, and that's never a good sign. But just so, so easy for Forest to break the deadlock 17 seconds in. As I say, the ball is played down to Jed Spence down the right-hand side. And if you don't know what a good right-back Jed Spence is in the Championship, probably the best fullback in the Championship this season. You know, he's got Bayern Munich, you know, Premier League clubs looking at him for very, very good reason. And they just gave him so much space to get down that right-hand side. Tom McIntyre at left-back, obviously not his natural position, but really struggled there. Spence is able to play a ball into the box, into Keenan Davis, who turns Michael Morrison so easily, and then puts it past Luke Southwood. And Ben, as I say, it is the worst possible way to start a football game, 17 seconds conceding. Are there questions over Tom McIntyre at left-back? As I say, obviously not his natural position. But I think it was also the fourth goal also came down his side as well. That there's got to be question marks both of him and of Michael Morrison in the middle. And the whole team, I suppose, to capitulate that early into the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's straight from kickoff. And, you know, at any level, it's kind of unforgivable, really. I mean, we've had a clear week on the training pitch, as they did, you know, last week. And it's very, very difficult, pardon the pun, to keep defending this team, because, you know, these are not one-offs. And we said this, you know, at the start of the calendar year. We said it towards the end of you know, 21, in terms of how they've been playing. This is a mentality issue. You know, we get onto Paul Ince and kind of what he's brought, or rather hasn't brought, to the team in a little bit. But the fundamental fact is that this group of players are incapable of doing the absolute basics required to put themselves in any position to get out anything from games. That's the bottom line, really. And the problem is that they are at the moment relying on all the other teams around them, or not even around them, but below them, to keep messing up and dropping points, as kind of, you know, happened yesterday, apart from Peterborough, who managed to snatch a draw. So, you know, we're as we were again in the league. But the problem is that we don't look capable of doing anything that would even, not even win the game, but just put ourselves in a position where we might win the game. And that's, you know, it's gone beyond concerning now. It's, you know, the team is kind of dying in front of our eyes about being too dramatic. It's a situation where we've got all these players looking to the summer and hoping to, you know, to punch their exit tickets out of the club. That's the kind of feeling watching this team at the moment. You know, we know that obviously Scott Dan will be with us for another season, unless, of course, he's got a relegation clause in his contract, which he may well have. But, you know, players are being asked to play out of position and they are really struggling with that. And that would all be well and good if they were kind of playing well in those positions previously. So you look at McIntyre, for example. He's been out injured for a little while, but he's not had a good season even before that. You know, he's been really, really poor. And I like him as an individual, and I like him because he's an academy product, and that might be a cop-out comment. But he was dreadful yesterday, absolutely dreadful. You know, Morrison getting to have the first goal, it's just the easiest goal that you're ever going to give away. And if you haven't seen it, I really, really recommend you watch the way that we, just the body language, the leading up to the goals, the players, the way that they give away those goals, as they have done all the way through the season. And, you know, you said off air, Ollie, that this is the fifth time this calendar year that we've conceded four goals or more, you know, this calendar year. So we're not even in April yet, and we've already given away four goals or more five times. And that's just frightening. It's absolutely frightening for a team that we are told repeatedly by the manager, by, you know, members of the board when they choose to speak to us, by, you know, players like Josh Loren yesterday. Oh, we've got the belief, we know what we need to do. Just do it. I would take a 0-0 for the next two games. I really would, because that would show some sort of resilience and that they're learning lessons from previous games, and they're not learning lessons as individuals, as a body of players. They're not. And you know, to concede three goals in 18 minutes, I think it was, in the second half, it's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. And I don't see at the moment anything's going to change that. I really don't. From the personnel we've got, you know, before Christmas, we were saying, well, when Maite comes back, McIntyre will make a difference. You know, Scott Dan will come back in. These players have not made a difference at all. And that comes from a collective responsibility. It's just not good enough. And it hasn't been good enough for a long time. And at the moment, you know, we're in serious danger of getting relegated, and we're not doing anything about that. We're not taking any responsibility for those results or those performances whatsoever. And it seems like it gets worse every week, not just based on performances, but the way they talk off the pitch and what they're going to do and how they're going to correct it. It's just not happening.
I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with pretty much every single point there. And that is almost a recap covered in one. But yeah, as you say, I think one of the most frustrating things is that this isn't a new observation. We've been saying it for weeks, and you know, this shows you how much of a problem it is, that this is the same thing just happening over and over and over again. It's this capitulation you know, in the second half that's happened, you know, obviously before Paul Ince as well, but it's happened twice in three games now under Paul Ince. obviously at Blackpool as well, because I think, to be fair, I think Reading grew into the game, or particularly in the first half. Obviously, after that dreadful start, there were sort of signs of improvement, but it's very easy to say that now, because it matters very, very little now, because of what happened in that second half. As you say, 3 goals in 18 minutes is just unforgivable, and we've seen it so many times this season. As you say, the fifth time in 2 months we've conceded 4+ goals in a game. We've now conceded 72 goals across the entire season, across 36 games. So we are averaging now conceding 2 goals a game, which is never going to get you anywhere. In the entire EFL, only Doncaster, who have conceded 73 goals, have conceded more goals than Reading this season, and Doncaster have played 2 more games. So I imagine when Reading get to 38 games, which obviously takes us over the next week against Bournemouth and Blackburn, then they will surpass Doncaster's figure. So it's fair to say that Reading do have the worst defence in the EFL this season. And it's something that, as you say, Ben, that Paul Ince has been banging on about, since he came in, really. One of the things he said in his, opening interview, if you like, was about the need to shore up the defence. It's obvious to everyone that there are talented attacking players in this team, and Reading don't really have a problem scoring goals. Obviously, we've drawn a bunch the last 2 games, but in general, we have decent enough attacking players, but it's always going to be, that issue at the back. As I say, Paul Ince has been banging on about it for weeks, about, needing to shore up the defence, and, that's what he's been focusing on in training. But, by the looks of it, it simply hasn't happened. As I say, they conceded 4 goals against Blackpool 2 weeks ago. They conceded 4 goals again here. They look incredibly fragile, Ben. And to be honest, it raises the question, really, that Paul Ince has been in charge, for about 3-4 weeks now. Has he really made a difference? Because, we won that Birmingham game, scraped it almost, but Birmingham had a couple of chances coming into the game. But we've now lost three games in a row, as I say, conceding 4 in 2 of those against Forest and against Blackpool. You have to beg the question. I still stand by the fact that Pavic had to be sacked to make a difference. But you now have to start questioning what difference has Ince actually made.
None at all. The stats are that Forest had, 5 shots on target yesterday. They scored 4 of them. So what's that? Over a 75% success rate. Less than that, I don't know, current percentages have gone out of my head. But, the point is that when you're having 5 shots on target and you score 4 of them, fundamentally, there is a serious issue there. Credit to Forest, and I feel like I'm saying that a lot. They did what they needed to do. And as other teams have done this season against us. But, they were gifted 4 goals, basically. They weren't, stats-wise, they only had 1 more shot in total than we did, but they managed to score 4 goals out of that. So that tells you that you go after the defence, and particularly the central defence. I mean, I like Michael Morrison. He's a great guy, but he's been rubbish. He's been absolutely rubbish this season. It's chopped and changed. Obviously Holmes has had COVID, but would he have made a difference yesterday? No, he wouldn't. The mentality of the team is just, well, there isn't any. There is literally no positive redeeming qualities in this team whatsoever. And, Ince has come in, probably the only manager in history to ever had any sort of managerial bounce. We won that 1 game and that was it. And even then we got quite lucky against Birmingham at home. Other than that, we don't really know how much input Gilkes is having. We don't really know whether Colin Cooper, who's been at the club for a couple of weeks on and off, is a permanent member of staff now in terms of helping the defence. We don't know what kind of Alex Ray is in charge of particularly. It's just a mess. I was trying to be as positive as a lot of other Reading fans were when Paul Ince came, and thought, okay, well, like you, Ollie, we've always been big fans of Paunovic, whether that's right or wrong, I'm not sure. But we all agreed on this pod that he needed to be sacked. And there wasn't a Reading fan alive that would say, oh yeah, give him another couple of weeks, because it was only going one way. But, with Paul Ince coming in, it has made absolutely no difference to the problems that we've got. And we can keep saying, well, all right, it's because the players are out of contract and they're not going to be here. But there still needs to be some sort of professional responsibility and professional pride to to carry out the job and do the best you can. You know, I've been in a situation where I know I've been leaving a job, but I've still gone in every day and done the best I possibly can. Same with loads of people listening to this pod, I would imagine. You don't just give up. And that's what it felt like yesterday. You know, yeah, okay, technically, we were in the game at 1-0 at halftime, you know, come out and score an early equaliser and the game might have been on. But three goals in 18 minutes is just, it's nothing short of a collapse. And I don't know what changes. I really don't. If we get relegated, we're looking at a very young side. I think if we stay up, we're still looking at a very young side next year. Clearly, and I hope to God this is the case, that Paul Ince won't be the manager next season, if he even makes it to the end of this current season now. So, you know, we keep hearing, we understand, we've got to stay in the league, blah, blah, blah. Nothing has changed. Not one thing has changed from those players. A couple of weeks ago, you know, obviously there was a confrontation with Yeardon. He came out and said, oh, you know, we're trying, we're doing the best we can. Don't see that. I just don't see it. You know, this group have got another manager sacked. They've got another situation where we are dealing with a very, very poor season on the pitch and obviously off it as well, which, you know, the players can't control. And it's just a mess. And it continues to be a mess. And as you said off air before we started talking, and as we'll come to in a minute, it's only going to get worse this week because we've got two very, very tough games against teams that are at the top of the league. So feasibly, we could go three games, well, four games if you include the one before this one, where we haven't won a game. It's all sorts of wrong. And I don't know, I really don't know what lifts this team now, because we've got, what, 2 months till the end of the season and we're only going one way right now. And if teams below us start picking up form, we are in serious trouble, because at least some of them are showing a little bit of fight and we just aren't doing
it. Yeah, I mean, it's become abundantly clear that ultimately the issue with Reading at the moment isn't the manager. You know, obviously, whether Paul Ince has been a positive impact can be debated. Is, you know, the concerns now are the same concerns that people had when he was first appointed. You know, the fact that he's not had a job in 8 years. You know, different, you know, he stands by the fact that he's got a great CV, which I still find baffling. If you look at the jobs he's done at other clubs, you know, I have some sympathy for him in some respect, because a lot of the jobs he's taken, he's walking into clubs that are, you know, absolute, you know, chaotic off the pitch. You know, you look at clubs like Blackpool under Carl Oyston, or when he went into Notts County, his first job at Macclesfield, he kept them up, you know, amongst stuff going off the pitch, and he's obviously walked into, you know, Reading where there is also turmoil off the pitch. So I, you know, we've been saying it for months that the issues go far beyond whoever is the manager of this football club, and ultimately what we're seeing now on the pitch is a manifestation of, you know, years of poor mismanagement off the pitch, as you say, Ben, letting all these contracts run down, where you're in a situation where you have all these players who, you know, probably know they aren't going to be here this time next year. You know, but at the same time, as you say, have some professional pride. You know, if you're not going to, you know, fight, you know, to be at a club next season, if you're not going to fight for the manager, whatever, just fight for your own professional pride, you know, because ultimately, if they are going to be leaving Reading at the end of the season, obviously a fair chunk of them, you know, will probably walk straight into clubs, the likes of John Swift, you know, who's obviously got Premier League interest around him. But surely there are players out there on that pitch whose contracts are running out, who know they're leaving, but thinking, at least let me put in some performances to try and get a new club. Because at this rate, you know, these performances, you know, we talk about putting yourself in a shop window, you know, they're putting themselves in the back storeroom, because they're not putting performances in at all. As I say, have some professional pride, you know, play for the badge, you know. And you mentioned it, you know, we're seeing it at clubs like Derby and at Barnsley. Obviously Derby lost yesterday, but the pride they've got and the spirit they've got in trying to stay up. I almost think, you know, Reading need to drop into that bottom three to give themselves a bit of a reality check, because you're seeing the clubs beneath them are showing a bit of fight, are showing a bit of character to try and get themselves out of their situation. And Reading's two wins a couple of weeks ago against Preston and Birmingham gave them that cushion, sort of took the pressure up a little bit. But now, you know, we're back to losing games, and that pressure is really beginning to come on again. And as you say, we've got a difficult week coming up with two very, very difficult games. And we could find ourselves, come the international break in 10 days' time, we could be right back in the thick of it. We will actually move on to a discussion on survival chances in sort of a mailbag pub chat hybrid type thing. But first, before that, we will listen briefly to what Paul Ince had to say after the defeat to Forest yesterday.
Listen, I think when you come here and you've got a game plan and you show the lads the dangers that Forest brings to you, and after 18 seconds around that, you're 1-0 down, it's not a great start. It's not a great start, and that's the last thing we wanted. But to be fair, after that, I thought we grew into the game. I thought the first 45 minutes, I mean, I definitely had a shot after that, Forest in the first half. Game plan was perfect, the shape was good. We had two very good chances, one from Morrow and one from Josh. I thought it was excellent, considering it was his first game for a long, long time. And I've gone in at half-time, and I'm thinking, I hate losing, but we're still in the game. And I said, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing a little bit more, a little bit, extra, and we get something out of the game. We concede the second goal, and they capitulate. They kind of show what a soft underbelly they have at times. And you can see where the reason why they are where they are. It's okay playing nice football, but when you kind of look at the goals that they concede, the goals that we've conceded, in before I come, 7 against Fulham, and, because we don't want to dig in and fight when we have to fight. We're in a dogfight. I knew before I got here we was in a dogfight. And the players have got to know we're in a dogfight. Whether the players are here next year, out of contract, in the contract, they owe it to the fans. They owe it to the fans, they owe it to the staff, they owe it to the community, to dig in and keep this club in this league. And I thought after 2-0 they didn't do that. It was embarrassing. We're all to blame. I'm to blame. It's not just about the players. I'm to blame, Al's to blame, the staff to blame, the players are to blame. But we've got to dig in, we've got to graft, and we've got to try and stay in this league.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yeah, we're doing a sort of hybrid mailbag slash pub chat type thing this week. Long time listeners of the podcast will remember the pub chat from years gone by. I thought we'd do a little discussion on sort of survival chances. We put a call out for questions for the mailbag quite soon before we were recording, so not too many responses. So I thought we'd have a little discussion on Reading's chances of staying up. We put a poll out on Twitter about an hour ago, saying, essentially just one simple question: do you think Reading will stay up in the Championship this season? 75% of respondents said no, Reading will not stay up this season, and 25% said yes, Reading will stay up. And as you said off air, Ben, it is obviously a result like yesterday will always impact the mood in that sense. If Reading go and beat Bournemouth on Tuesday night, which I appreciate, it's a very slim possibility. I imagine those numbers will swing the other way, perhaps. But as it stands, Reading have a 4-point gap between them and the relegation zone. So Reading in 21st place, played 36, 29 points. Barnsley have also played 36, they've got 25 points. Then Barnsley are the one team who played one more game than everybody else in this bottom four. They played 37 games and got 24 points. And then Peterborough, bottom of the table, played 36 and points 23. In terms of the results yesterday, so both Barnsley and Peterborough both got a point yesterday. Barnsley drew 1-1 against league leaders Fulham, which is obviously a cracking result for them. A very dodgy penalty in that game. If you've not seen it, Barnsley's penalty was very, very dubious indeed. And Fulham scored quite late on to equalise. Peterborough got a 2-2 draw against Stoke, and Derby lost 2-0 to Bournemouth, who obviously we travelled to on Tuesday night. Ben, I'll ask for your answer for this snap poll on whether Reading will stay up, but I'll read out a couple of responses we got just before that. Hannah Miles says, I said weeks ago when Pownell was sacked that we would stay up, not because we'll go on a run, but because of Barnsley, Derby and Peterborough just being just as bad, if not worse. Thank goodness we have the 4-point cushion. Otherwise, it would have been a yes for relegation. Dean Bennett says, not a chance that we stay up and we're going down. Paul Ince is just accelerating that. And then North Devon Royals, whereas up until yesterday, I thought we would stay up. We don't appear to have the team spirit and performances to match the three teams below us do. Actions speak louder than words ever do. I think they're all fair points, but I think it is certainly that debate really that if Reading do stay up, as Hannah says, ultimately it's probably going to be because the three teams below them can't quite get over the line because right now it seems as if that's all it's going to save Reading, and it's frustrating saying that because ultimately survival is still in Reading's hands. They have that 4-point cushion. You know, they've still got to go to Barnsley and play, and certainly in April there are more winnable fixtures. I'll say we've got a difficult week this week with Bournemouth and Blackburn, but there are sort of then games in April against teams in the bottom half, which is going to be that crucial period. Yes or no, Ben, will Reading stay up this season?
My mood at the moment says no, purely because I feel like for the second season in a row, our whole season, our entire season will be defined against a game against Barnsley, because, you know, by the time that game rolls around on the 2nd of April, I think it is, we could well be in the bottom three. You know, if Barnsley win their games coming up and we lose both of ours. And that really would pile the pressure on. You know, I feel like the players at the moment, as we've said, you know, previously, are just kind of dining out on the fact that they know those three teams aren't going to pick up huge amounts of points. You know, they're all pretty much out of form. The only way that game doesn't become as pressurised as if we go and beat Blackburn, who are in a pretty poor run of form at the moment. But I just can't see us getting anything out of the Bournemouth game. And overall, you know, the games are kind of fair to middling for us. You know, we've got Luton last game of the season, and we play West Brom at home as well, Cardiff and Stoke at home after this run of games. So, you know, with any other team, we go, oh, that's good, we've got quite a few home games. With us, it doesn't make a difference. You know, it doesn't make any difference at all. And I just feel that, you know, maybe, and this is going to sound very odd, but maybe losing those next two games and having Barnsley pick up points will really make the players understand the situation we're in, because the impression that I get from them when I watch them is that they don't seem to understand the predicament we're in. You know, they're looking at the table and seeing, well, we're 4 points clear. You know, we've got a game in hand over Derby, which, you know, really means nothing at the moment. And the kind of the impression is that there'll always be something else to get them out of this. And really, they need to start understanding, as they keep saying, that they do understand this situation. They do understand what they need to do. But they're not doing that. You know, there's no signs whatsoever of them understanding that. So at the moment, my answer to that question would be no. I don't see us staying up, because I see more teams around us having more fight, more belief in what they're trying to do and their kind of pattern of play than we are. And I think if we had slightly easier games coming up in the next, you know, in the next two games, then I might sort of change my opinion. But I just don't see us getting anything out of those next two games. And that leads me to think that by the time we come to Barnsley, we'll be in the bottom three. That's kind of a long-winded answer to no, basically. But it whichever way you spin it, it's not good looking for us as a football club at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, for a, you know, seemingly quite simple question, it is, to be fair, a very difficult one to answer because of all the circumstances around it. And, you know, we know the nature of the Championship. You know, things can change incredibly quickly. And, you know, I'm sure there are lots of twists and turns to come over the next 10 days. And yeah, it is difficult to answer, because I've always said, I think I've very rarely sort of veered into that we won't stay up this season. I've always been not necessarily optimistic, but we've always had that cushion, and perhaps that is slight naivety, but it does always seem sort of in seasons gone by, and sort of particularly in what is it, 17, 18 and 18, 19, where we were in relegation battles. And you know, we haven't actually dropped into the bottom three, I don't think, so far this season. We might have done for about a week or so. But certainly in those campaigns, we were in the bottom three for sort of prolonged periods of time. And then we found a way of recovering. And I found it quite interesting. There was an interview with Omar Richards in the Times this week or last week. And he sort of summed up actually quite well. It sort of sums up sort of how I sort of feel about it. And he said sort of, I'm paraphrasing here, but sort of something like along the lines of sort of Reading as a club always seems to be okay. They always seem to to find a way of staying up. And I thought, yeah, that is bang on, really, because we do that. There always seems to be in my mind that, oh yeah, we'll be fine. Yeah, we've always been fine in seasons, you know, gone by. Obviously, we relegated from the Premier League, but I've never seen Reading drop lower than the second tier, you know. But we are now in a position where, as you say, Ben, that the next week could put Reading right back in it, and then that run in April is massive, particularly starting with that Barnsley game, because ultimately it's that run in April that you're going to have to start picking up points in, because you are playing teams around you. You know, statistically, I think Reading do have, I say, the easiest in sort of inverted quote marks running out of the teams in terms of sort of the points per game, home and away ratio, sort of their remaining opponents compared to the bottom four. But as you say, in many ways, that, you know, there's stuff that the numbers can't, you know, take into consideration, like that spirit, like that unity, and there does seem to be so much more fight in the teams below us. And I also think that point on realization is key as well. I think that there was an interview with, I think it was Tom McIntyre earlier this week, that, you know, he was saying sort of, you know, we don't want to be in this battle. We'd rather be fighting at the top of the table. And look, I appreciate the sentiment, but I also think that in itself is slightly worrying to have that sort of mindset that, you know, we'd obviously much rather be, you know, fighting for the playoffs, which is obviously true, but it almost, you know, shows that there isn't any real sort of realization of the situation that we're up, that we are in. You know, the reality is, if you take out points deductions, you know, both ours and Derby's, and, you know, I appreciate this is sort of fantasy stuff, but if you take out sort of if you look at the true Championship league table, the reality is that the Reading are in the bottom three. We have been, sort of points wise and results wise, we have been the third worst team in the Championship this season, which, again, I don't think really gets spoken about enough, because there isn't that realization that because of Derby's points deduction, we do have that cushion. Whereas in any normal season, we'd be in a whole, you know, world of trouble, which we are anyway, but we'd been in even more trouble without those points deductions. So, yeah, the next week is key. I think I'm going into the week, when we'll talk about it in the preview in a bit, but I mean, I'm going into the week thinking we're not going to get any points from these next two games. And then, you know, ultimately it comes down to how the teams below us do to see how that table looks heading into April. But yeah, then that period in April is massive, kicking off with that Barnsley game, and yeah, a season defining game against Barnsley again. So hopefully Lucas Yao manages to find his shooting boots for this season's fixture. As I say, yeah, we'll look ahead to those Bournemouth and Blackburn games in big match preview, but we'll briefly round up all of the stuff going on around the club in news bites.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, so a little look at all the results for the respective teams at Reading. Not a great weekend for the women either. They lost 3-1 to Manchester United in a WSL on Saturday at the Select Carl Issing Stadium. They are now sixth in a WSL table, and they travel to Man City on Wednesday night, who they're actually level on points. I think City are fifth on goal difference. So a win would be key there for Kelly Chambers' side. The under-23 team, they drew 0-0 with Birmingham in the Premier League 2 last weekend. And then they also progressed to the semi-finals of the Barks and Bucks Cup in midweek by beating Chesham United on penalties on Wednesday. So it'd be nice if they could win some silverware for the club this season in that competition. They're into the last four, I think. They can play MK Dons or Wickham or someone else as well, I think. I'm not quite sure if the draw's been done yet. But they are bottom of Premier League 2. Obviously, no relegation in that league, so, you know, not a huge concern, you know, in terms of going down. Obviously, not great to be bottom of the league. And they host Burnley at the Select Carl Issing Stadium on Monday evening. And then the under-18s, they lost 5-0 to Fulham in the under-18 Premier League on Saturday, having lost 6-0 to West Ham last week. So not a great couple of weeks for the under-18s. They're 10th out of 14 in the under-18 Premier League and host Chelsea at Bearwood on Wednesday. One other brief bit of news. We had a signing last week. We haven't mentioned it yet, but there was a new goalkeeper at the club last week, Oyan Nyland. 31 years old, ex-Aston Villa, Norwich and Bournemouth. 33 caps for Norway. It's always tricky, Ben. Obviously, I think when you're a free agent at this stage of the season, you're never going to be a world beater. But in terms of, I think that, you know, there's a couple of questions here. Really, A, was Nyland needed? Obviously, Carl Hein is out for the season. He's back at Arsenal after injuring his finger or thumb, I think. Axel Andreasen is also injured at the moment. You know, so that there's no senior competition. Obviously, Kai Boyce-Clark, but he's, you know, 18, 19 years old, so, you know, not really ready to challenge Luke Southwood just yet. So there's not really any competition for Luke Southwood. Obviously, again, his performance was, you know, brought into question a little bit yesterday. I think he was at fault for, I think it was the third goal. I think he let the ball through his fingers quite easily. But yeah, I suppose the two key questions here, Ben, are A, was Ørjan Nyland needed? What, you know, did Reading need to sign him? And sort of B, you know, does he come in to face Bournemouth on Tuesday?
Yes and yes, put simply. I think, you know, I was probably more enthused by his signing than I was Carl Hines, purely because, you know, I suppose from a lazy football fan point of view, but I'd heard of Nyland, however you say it. And, you know, clearly the club don't rate Southwood at the moment. And it's, you know, it's not difficult to see why they might feel like that. I mean, his performances haven't been good enough in the cold light of day. You know, you can talk about defence in front of him all day, but he's still shipping the goals, and he's made some quite high profile mistakes. So clearly there's something about Southwood that isn't quite right, that sits quite well with the club at the moment. So I would expect, I'd expect Nolan to come in and play against Bournemouth on Tuesday. Whether he makes a difference, I don't know. You know, from what I recall of him, he was quite good at Villa. He made a couple of great saves in his game at Sheffield United, I think, that was absolutely stunning. You know, obviously been capped sort of 30-plus times or whatever for Norway. So, you know, he comes with a fairly good pedigree. And some experience, which, you know, hopefully we'll be able to help us out in the running. But I don't see Southwood starting on Tuesday. I'd be very, very surprised if that does happen. But you never know with this club. You know, they've surprised us before, so albeit in the wrong way and surprising. But, you know, hopefully if he does come in, he will make a difference and be a little bit more convincing than maybe Hein was, because, again, I wasn't hugely keen on him either, really. So, you know, goalkeeper long term is probably a position they need to look at, you know, heading into the summer and into next season, in terms of what they really want to do with that role and what they're expecting from, you know, the number one goalkeeper at the club, really.
Yeah, when you get through four first choice goalkeepers in one season, then you know something's a bit of a worry. I think it happened a couple of years ago again when Emi Martinez finally sort of came in, sort of made the position his own. But before that, they'd had, I think, Vitor Minono, Sam Walker, and Anssi Iacola. So, yeah, when you get through four keepers, you know something's a little bit worrying. Yeah, I think, you know, you can debate whether it's harsh on Southwood or not. I think Southwood's a decent keeper. I think particularly in the first half of the season when he came in for Raphael, he really took his chance. And you know, I think he won our Player of the Month award three times in a row, which I think is a record. So, but yeah, it's difficult to get away from the fact that he has made a couple of sort of shaky performances the last few games and before Carl Hein came in as well. So, and you know, as free agents go, I think Nyland was undoubtedly the best one out there in terms of experience and sort of profile. So, if they were going to bring a keeper in, which, you know, I wasn't overly against, then I don't think Ireland's a bad signing, considering, you know, their options were quite limited, obviously, at this point in the season. But yeah, obviously, Nyland, ex-Bournemouth, so he may well make his debut against his former employers on Tuesday night, and we'll get into previewing that game and the home game against Blackburn right now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yeah, so a very difficult week ahead for Reading before the international break. Bournemouth away on Tuesday night and then Blackburn at home next Saturday. So those two clubs sit second and fourth in the championship table, respectively. Bournemouth, I think, is obviously the more worrying game, particularly considering the sort of the attacking quality they've got up against Reading's, you know, as we've spoken about, the worst defence in the EFL, essentially. Bournemouth have scored 55 goals in 34 games. Obviously, Dominic Solanke's the big one, 21 goals this season for him. You know, but they've also got players like Jamal Lowe, Jaden Anthony, Srikky Dembele, Ryan Christie as well. You know, obviously, they're that mad deadline day in January where they brought in about five players, including Todd Cantwell, who is probably one of the best players in this division for Norwich, when they won promotion the last few years. And they brought in Nat Phillips on loan from Liverpool as well, who had Premier League interest, to bring him in as well. They've done well, and Dembele, I think, was another one. Kiefer Moore, who they brought in January, is currently injured, so we don't have to worry about him. But obviously, as I say, Dominic Solanke is that big one. 21 goals this season for him. Blackburn obviously also have one of the best strikers in the Championship on their books, Ben Brereton-Diaz, but he is currently out with an ankle injury. So that's one bit of positive news for the Blackburn game. And they've been quite strange, Blackburn, really, since the turn of the calendar year. They scored just three goals in 13 matches since the start of 2022, so even worse than Reading on that front. But bizarrely, they are still fourth in Championship. You know, so, and obviously they beat Reading earlier in the season at Ewood Park. So definitely two very difficult games for Reading. Ben, is there any way? As I say, I think Blackburn is the more, I say, winnable. I think we're lucky to get a point really against either side. But is it more a case that it's not going to be these games that define Reading's season? It's going to be more, you know, that game against Barnsley in April and sort of the run of games in April. Or, you know, as we say, we don't want to be in a position where we lose both of those these games this week and find ourselves in a lot of trouble come the international break.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Blackburn first. I mean, you know, that's the game that probably out of the two you'd be targeting, or that, you know, the players should be targeting. You know, they'll give us some line about, you know, we want to win every game, want to be competitive, but realistically, we can't compete with Bournemouth right now. You know, as you said, they've got some, you know, very, very good players for this division. But in terms of Blackburn, you know, they're kind of towards the end of the form table over the last six or seven games. Had a shocking result yesterday. I think it was like 92nd or 93rd minute, you know, against a very, very basic, very average Bristol City side that they conceded against. So, you know, they're really struggling with Diaz out. You know, they have got some good players, but they're clearly a lot more vulnerable than probably Bournemouth are. And they're, you know, the goals of, you know, as you pointed out, have really dried up for them. So, you know, in terms of that game, for what could be the horror show on Tuesday night, you know, Blackburn is really the key for me this week. And heading into the, you know, the international break, it would be nice to get some sort of positivity out of that game to see us off the next sort of 2 weeks or whatever. And then that, you know, that showdown with Barnsley in early April. You know, I don't see us getting anything out of Bournemouth game whatsoever. You know, very, very good players. They've got a wealth of talent. You know, it's kind of looking at their bench from yesterday, and they didn't bring on sort of, you know, two or three of the players that you'd expect to see. You know, they've got this wealth of talent. They're starting to pick up form. It's unlikely they're going to catch Fulham, but they're still in there, really. And, you know, Solanke's obviously a player that's been around, but has really kind of found his feet with Bournemouth this season. I really like Lewis Cook, you know, sort of very basic, but has been kind of, I suppose, really transformed and changed by Parker into a kind of a real powerhouse in midfield. You know, and obviously Todd Cantwell, who you mentioned too, is just a phenomenal player. So they've got a wealth of talent that is really going to be to be interested to see how they cope in the Premier League next year with that, because I fully expect them to go up as the second team this year. But in terms of us, I think we've really got to kind of target that Blackburn game and go after them from the off. I know it sounds sort of strange targeting a game a week in advance when we've got a game in the middle, but I just don't see us competing in the game on Tuesday at all. I really hope I'm wrong. But I just don't see us getting anything, you know, out of that game. I think if we keep a clean sheet against Bournemouth, it's a great, you know, fantastic element to our game. But I just don't see us doing that. So it's got to be targeting 3 points for the Blackburn game on Saturday.
I think if we keep a clean sheet against Bournemouth, having the worst defence in the league, up against the second best attack in the league, it would be a minor miracle, I think. I completely agree. I think it's, you know, it is easy to sort of say this mantra of win every game and you should be targeting to win every game. And yes, that's true to a certain degree. But, you know, ultimately, it's not going to be this game against Bournemouth, I don't think, that's going to define where Reading finishes the season. You know, obviously a point or three would be massive, and you know, I absolutely love that, but I don't think the result in this game is going to sort of hinge our survival chances, so to speak. Looking at the other fixtures over the next week before the international break, Barnsley have Bristol City at home, so definitely a winnable game for them there, so they could easily cut the gap to 1 point going into next weekend, and then they travel to Sheffield United away from home. Derby also face Blackburn this week. They travel to Ewood Park on Tuesday night or Wednesday night, I think. And then they host Coventry the following weekend. And then Peterborough host Swansea and then travel to QPR. So, you know, definitely, you know, those three teams have much more winnable games, or you know, at least one winnable game compared to Reading. So, yeah, as we said, you know, throughout the show, things could change dramatically over the next week, and you know, we'll have a lot better picture of where we are going into that international break in a week's time. In terms of any changes, Ben, hopefully Lucas Joao, I suppose, might be available to come back in to start. Was the only I say fit enough for the bench. He obviously had COVID, so I haven't recovered from that. Hopefully might be able to come back in. Obviously Yakimetti played 90 minutes yesterday. Maybe Obi Ajari came in. He came off the bench yesterday. We've not really seen Tom Delibashiri much over the last couple of weeks. You know, I'd probably bring him in maybe for Danny Drinkwater, who, again, you know, we haven't mentioned yet, but again, was, you know, one of the worst performers out there yesterday. You know, and you know, doesn't seem to be adding anything at all to Reading's team at the moment, Danny Drinkwater. So, you know, Tom Delibashiri sort of had a bit of spell on the sidelines. You know, not through injury, but as in just out of the team. I think it could be worth bringing him back in. Obviously, John Swift and Tom Holmes a bit of an unknown on them. Obviously, they got COVID on Thursday, so you know, there might be a chance that they can come back in. You know, and I think off the basis of Saturday, if Swift and Holmes are available, then they have to come straight back in. You know, I think the ability of that centre back partnership of Scott Dan and Michael Morrison is, you know, obviously packed with experience. You know, not that it showed yesterday, but you know, not mobile at all, really. You know, they got turned far too easily for you know, all of the goals essentially yesterday. You know, so you'd probably bring Tom Holmes back in for one of them. And you know, obviously, you know, John Swift, you know, has blown hot and cold the last couple of months, but you know, if he's available, then you definitely bring him in. What changes would you make, Ben? I haven't actually mentioned Brandon Barker yet. We finally saw Brandon Barker get a sustained spell on the pitch yesterday. Could he finally be handed a start on Tuesday night?
Well, I don't think any of those players could complain if they drop out of the team, to be quite honest with you. You know, I think maybe the only one who would be harshly done by there is Mate, who, you know, regardless of the quality, always shows 100% effort. And I suppose the same with Renamota as well, really. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Renamota. Obviously not good yesterday, and I think, you know, playing next to Drinkwater has kind of made him a more erratic and less stable player. Whether or not it's because he's doing two people's jobs in the middle there, I don't know, but he's not been brilliant, really. So I think any one of those players, if there are opportunities to change, then I think the message needs to be sent that they do need to be mixed up. And I think no one's, you know, they need to feel like they're not, their place isn't secure at all. I would expect, as we said earlier, the goalkeeper to change. Whether or not there's someone able-bodied and good enough to play left back, because, you know, to be fair to him, he can't do any worse than McIntyre did yesterday. So maybe that would be something to look at too. But yeah, I mean, any changes would probably be welcome. I know we're clutching at straws here. I know we want to see teams or our teams being consistent and you know, having a strongest 11 out, but we don't know what that is, because we've not seen that for any length of the time this season. So I don't think there could be any complaints from any of them if any of them were swapped, really. And just having some sort of game plan to cope Bournemouth, you know, whether that's sort of sit a lot deeper than we have been doing, cover ourselves a bit more defensively, I don't know. But I guess the improvement would be not conceding in the first minute, you know, maybe leave it to the second or third to give us a bit of breathing space to settle into the game. I don't know. obviously I'm being flippant, but any one of those players could be taken out and swapped if there is a suitable replacement and they're fit enough and well enough to play.
Yeah, I mean, if you're naming the same team that, you know, lost 4-0 on the weekend, if you're naming that same team again, then you're almost asking for trouble. So, yeah, hopefully there will be a couple of changes. And so hopefully, you know, Lucas Joao and John Swift are both able to return to starting lineup, because, you know, ultimately, if they're in a team, they're ready to have a much better chance of getting something out of the game. So we will have to wait and see. Predictions-wise, I think most people went for defeats against Forest. I think anyone got 4-0. Most people did get a defeat, a point for most people yesterday. But Ben, we won't do Blackburn, but we will do prediction for Bournemouth away on Tuesday night.
3-0 loss. I guess that would be an improvement, you know, playing a better team in Bournemouth than Forest. But yeah, I don't see a scoring. So yeah, 3-0 Bournemouth.
It's difficult to look anywhere other than a heavy defeat. I might even go, considering the talent that Bournemouth have got in there, so I might even go, I'll go 5-1, just not that I want that to happen, but I have no hope really at the moment with this defence in particular. As I say, looking at the talent that Bournemouth have in their side, I might as well go for 5-1, but hopefully Reading can prove us wrong and put in a performance like they did against Bournemouth at home last season. But I don't think we've not won at Vitality. I've not mentioned this, but it wasn't the Vitality always, or Dean Court, whatever you want to call it, where we've not won away at Bournemouth since 2001. So I'm not holding out any hope really for Tuesday night, but as you say, hopefully then a slightly more winnable fixture at home against Blackburn, and we'll do predictions for that after the Bournemouth games. I'm sure sort of opinions and thoughts will change based off, you know, whatever happens down on the South Coast on Tuesday night. But that just about wraps up episode 293 of the Tirelessed End podcast. We are getting closer to episode 300. You know, we're hoping that episode 300 is not a relegation review show. Hopefully it's more of a survival celebration show, but fingers crossed and touch wood for that. But thank you again, as always, for tuning in. You know, everyone is probably consigned to the fact that these are not going to be particularly enjoyable listens for the rest of the season, but hopefully we've done our best, and we'll keep ploughing on and putting some effort in, even if the team aren't bothering on the pitch. Ben, thank you very much for joining me as always this week.
No problem at all. Try and have a good week, everybody, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed and touch wood, as I say, for something over the next week. But as I say, that it'll be all to play for come April. The table going into the international break will be very, very interesting indeed after these fixtures against Bournemouth and against Blackburn. As I say, thank you very much, as always, for listening, and come on, you Ars.
You smile, funny how it crumbles.